in the North Hills of Pittsburgh. There. Let's see. Today's reading, August 27th, just for today. Choosing life. Change from self-destructive patterns of life became necessary. Basic text, page 15. Active addiction is a smoldering death wish. Each of us courted death every time we used. Our lifestyles, too, put us at risk. The life in an addict is sold cheaply, with every day and every dose. In recovery, the first pattern we change is the pattern of using. Staying clean is the start of our journey into life. But our self-destructive behavior usually went far deeper than just our using. Even in recovery, we may still treat ourselves as if we are worthless. When we treat ourselves badly, we feel badly. And when we feel badly, we seek relief, maybe even in our old solutions, drugs. Choosing recovery means choosing life. We decide each day that we want to live and be free. Each time we avoid self-destructive behavior, we choose recovery. Just for today, I will choose life by choosing recovery. I will take care of myself. You know, and I've been reading this just for today, you know, for like the last 12 years, and I don't remember ever reading this. You know, and that's amazing because every time I read, you know, the morning meditation book, every year for the last 12 years, it's meant something different. But I don't ever remember ever reading this. So last night, we started a meeting around 1:15 in the morning. And this is basically what we talked about. We were talking about treating ourselves good. You know, who do we make amends to first? And after the last 12 years, I've learned to promptly admit when I was wrong and make amends. You know, that's what we learned to do in here. But last night I was talking about making amends to myself first. That I'm, you know, like if I, at the end of the day, I do an inventory of what I did, and if I've harmed someone in any way, you know, I want to go make amends to them. And then I eventually figured that out. If I did something harmful to me, you know, I need to make amends to myself. And, you know, that's what this reading says. You know, taking care of myself. I'll tell just a little brief history. I've been in recovery since August 16th, 1977. So I've been doing this for 29 years. And I was 17 years old. I was one of those kids that came in here. And every time I see a kid come in here, I just think of me. You know, when I came in, you know, I had been living on the streets in Chicago for 2 years. You know, before the streets made me surrender. It was either death, you know, or coming here. And thank God, you know, my higher power intervened. And I got to get introduced to the 12 steps. Not through this fellowship first, but through our predecessors. And I remember my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting was in the summer of 77 in Chicago. And I remember going to that meeting thinking, there ain't no freaking way that these people are clean. No way. You know, and I really believed that. I sat there in the room and I'm like, there was just so much chaos. And I just thought it was like a place where other dealers met other dealers. You know what I mean? That's how it appeared to me, you know, as a 17-year-old. But, you know, I got the message, you know, when I first came in, you know, to choose life, you know, and I was 17 and I stuck around for 5 years. I stayed clean. My life got really good, but then I turned 22, you know, and then I figured that this disease was, because of where I grew up. Or because it was because of my age. Or it was because of my lack of education. Or it was because of the parents that I had. And I relapsed for a year. But I didn't go back to my drug of choice. So that was my lie. The disease lied to me and told me that it was okay because, it wasn't my drug of choice. And somehow in the back of my mind, I always figured, well, if I never went back, you know, to shooting dope, then I really wasn't, I wasn't an addict, and I was okay. But, so I was out there for a year at 22, and I was still practicing what I had learned in these rooms. I was writing in my journal every night. You know, I was thanking God for the day that I had. But I was 22, and I didn't have a clue. You know, I really didn't. And then I got married, and then I stayed clean for 10 years. But those 10 years, I wasn't allowed to go to meetings. And I raised a family. And I just remember being miserable as shit, just miserable. And then that marriage fell apart. And what did I do to go seek relief? We seek relief maybe even in old solutions. Well, I went back. I was in so much pain, I went back to my old solutions. But in the back of my mind, I said, I'm not really getting high and I'm not really using if I don't go back to my drug of choice. So I didn't. You know, so I tried something else. And this something else brought me to my knees so quick. And I was out there for 18 months. And during that 18 months, I still had that attitude of, see, because I had been here before. And I knew that it was here. And I told myself, I'm going to use until I die, or I'm going to use until I wind up back in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't care which one came first. And that was pretty sad. But that was not me. That was the disease. And I made it back here January 27th, 1994. And that day, you know, I died. But I actually was born again. So in order for me to reach the death of that, I reached the death. And then came here, and now I have life. So now I have these daily meditations, I have the meetings and the readings, and I have you guys giving me hugs, and I have a choice to choose recovery, or I could choose my old patterns, my self-will, or what I knew. And in the beginning, when I first came in, I would sit down in a meeting, and I was pissed off. Actually, I was really pissed off that I wound up back here. I was pissed off that I didn't die, you know, because now I had to do this life thing, you know. And I didn't know how I was going to do it because I was in a whole bunch of fear because I had been a failure so far, I thought. But so my first 18 months, I came in here. I was pissed off. I didn't let anybody near me. You know, I had a mouth on me, which kept people away, I thought. You know, and then one day, at about 18 months, I got a sponsor, and I got a home group. And that sponsor made me get up and tell my story, because I hadn't done it. And I remember I got up at the podium like this, and I cried for 10 minutes. I couldn't say a word. And then I shared for 10 minutes, but I shared and cried. You couldn't understand a word I was saying. And then 10 minutes after that, I cried. So pretty much my share was I cried. And I thought I had failed, you know, getting up and speaking. And at the end of that meeting, we come up and give each other hugs. You know, and everybody just said, wow, that was so incredible. And I'm like, oh, I just cried. And they said, you know how many people sit in these rooms for years and they can't cry? And some of them said, you made me cry. You helped me cry. And I think what happened that day when I got up is by me crying, I broke down my wall. And you know, I let that meanness go, or I let that pissed offness go. It washed away how I was viewing life. The tears washed away how I was viewing life. And it's like after a rain, you know, everything smells good, looks good, and everything. So it's like I had this rain and everything. I had a whole new life in front of me, so I had a choice. You know, what was I going to do? You know, and of course, I'm here. I want to choose recovery. You know, but in the beginning, I wasn't and self-will still, you know, and I didn't know it. And, you know, I start just showing up, you know, just start, you know, putting the chairs up, making the coffee, you know, just getting involved, staying busy. See, I learned to do that, like being a mom. You know, I have three kids, and I stayed busy all day, and I didn't have to sit down and communicate with anybody if I kept my life filled with things to do. So I did that when I came in here. I would stay busy setting up the chairs, setting up meetings, and, you know, hugging and talking, and I didn't really spend a whole lot of time sitting down, you know, with me. And I did that for a couple of years, and because I didn't want to get to know who I was. But during those couple of years, yeah, I wasn't using drugs. I wasn't putting drugs in me, but I was using old behaviors to seek relief from my pain that I was in. And those old behaviors were my character defects and my shortcomings. And I didn't learn about those until I actually, you know, did the fourth step. And in the fourth step, I got to see what my part was, and I got to see what my part wasn't. And by doing my fifth step with my sponsor, I had another spiritual awakening. I had another cleansing. I had 25 pages to read to my sponsor. You know, we got down on our knees and did our opening prayer and did what we did. And that day, you know, I cried the whole time I was reading my fifth step. So I had another spiritual awakening when I was doing that. And I had no idea what, you know, what character defects were, you know, what shortcomings were, but I did what my sponsor told me. She said, go do this, and I did. So over the next couple months, these bricks were hitting me in the face. And what these bricks were things that I was, that I would seek relief from. It wasn't the drugs anymore, it was these character defects and these shortcomings, you know, and I used those to seek relief. I didn't know that at the time. You know, I mean, it's only here now, you know, 12 years later that I have this time to look back at what I was doing. Thank God I stuck around, you know, because if I would have left at 6 years or 8 years, I wouldn't be able to have the perspective that I have now to look back at it all. And the thing is I had to repeat those behaviors that I seeked relief. I had to repeat those over and over until I got sick and tired of them, just like I did with my drug of choice. You know, and I've learned here that it isn't about the drug. It's what got me in here, yes. It's what gave me a common pain that I have with everybody in here. You know what I mean? But it isn't who I am. And my character defects that I had developed by practicing them for years, it wasn't who I was either. It wasn't really who I was. And last night when we were sitting at that meeting at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, I was sharing about how making amends to myself came first at the end of the day, like when I was doing my 10th step. And that really, the light bulb went off last night. I said it out loud. See, there's a thing here. You can say all you want here in your head, but it's like once you actually say it and share it from your heart, then it really permeates. And I have been living my life by treating myself good. In the last 3 years, I have been broke. I came in recovery with a lot of money. I came in here with a lot of property. I came in here with a lot of prestige. I came in here with a big, huge ass ego, you know, and through the years, you know, I remember one year I prayed, I wanted to get closer to my higher power. I prayed, please, this year I would like to get closer to you. And, you know, not that everything was stripped away from me to get closer to my higher power, but everything was stripped away from me for me to get closer to my higher power. And so no money, no more property, no more prestige, and my ego had been deflated. And those are also forms of things that I use, you know, to seek relief. Money, property, and prestige will divert us from our primary purpose. You know, the readings, you know, it's like in the beginning of every meeting, the readings is really where it's at. You know, and I think what I have figured out is that we read them at the beginning of the meeting over and over and over, and then one day they finally sink in, you know. And it's only through application and practice that it works. And I have learned to apply what I've learned here, what I've learned in the steps and the traditions, you know, apply those in my life, and then I don't have to use, you know, old destructive patterns in my life anymore. I guess the biggest thing that I really wanted to work on here was the way I responded to my children. You know, it's like in here, someone can do me wrong, and I'm not going to snap at you and yell at you like I yell at my kids. You know, and I love them dearly. And one of my old patterns, how I seeked immediate relief, was I lashed out on my kids. And all that did was made me feel bad. You know, and it says right in here, you know, we seek relief maybe even in old solutions. You know, and we may still treat ourselves as if we are worthless. You know, and, you know, I don't know what it was that I had to do except show up here every day and to the point to where I felt like I was worth something. You know, and it took years to do that. And I'm sitting around, you know, I walk around, you know, my head up high and I'm acting as if I had this self-esteem. I'm acting as if I was, you know, had worth and all that. When actually deep down inside, I didn't quite have it yet, but I was practicing having it. So I practice having it until I actually have it. You know, but I mean, there's some days that I don't feel, some days I feel worthless. In the days that I get those thoughts and stuff, I recognize it as my disease. That's my disease telling me that I'm worthless. You know, or telling me that I'm a bad mom for screaming and yelling, or telling me that I'm too fat, or that I'm getting too old, you know, or that I'm, you know, I failed my math class 3 times, so I'm dumb. That's my disease, you know. Change from self-destructive patterns of life became necessary. In order for me, I remember when I got the 18 months and I got the sponsor and I got the home group, at that point in my recovery, I had a choice. I was either going to do recovery or I was going to go back out there and end it. I mean, that's where I stood. That's the line that I came to. And I chose to stick here, even though I really did not want to be here, you know, but I stayed, and I'm glad I did. And over the years, I've had people do my inventory here. I've had people talk about me, you know, and I remember my sponsor telling me, it is none of your business what people say about you. It really is none of your business. They can say all they want, you know, and I had to learn over the years how to not let that affect me, how not to let that affect my self-esteem, you know. And probably about a year ago in my home group, one of the girls in the home group got in my face, and I didn't really realize what she was saying to me until after it sunk in, and she was like approaching me to fight. And you know what? My old streak came out just like that. I was like, yeah, come on, let's take it out. You know what I mean? Let's go. You know? And the meeting had ended, and the home group members, we were cleaning up, and this all happened in front of my home group. And I just remember, my rage and everything, I went to red instantly. And I'm thinking, after it was all over with, I'm thinking, Carol, you're 46 years old. You can't do that no more. you're not 20 years old anymore. You can't. But I instantly went there. So I went home that night, and my home group was in walking distance. And by the time I left the home group and got home, I had to call her and make amends for my part, even though she's the one that got in my face. But how I reacted was an old pattern. I seeked relief right away. I wanted relief right away. So I had to call and make amends to her for my part for reacting. And then the following week, I had to go back to my home group and make amends to my home group for how I had acted. What if there was a newcomer in that? What if there was a newcomer in that meeting that night for the first time and they saw that? You know what I mean? They would never come back there. You know? Like, they got that shit out in the streets. Why would they come and see? You know what I mean? It's like I had to clean up my side. But, you know, if I didn't repeat that pattern, I wouldn't have known that I had to repeat, that I had to fix it. You know what I mean? Or change it. Thank God for the 10th step. But, I don't know. I just feel like I have totally, absolutely changed 180 degrees, you know, from the first time I came in here till now. And as far as repeating destructive patterns, one of the most devastating ones was relationships. And I have through opportunities that have been presented into my life, I have had opportunities to change those patterns because I don't want that pain anymore. I mean, I don't want the pain from destructive patterns and relationships. And so I've gotten boundaries, and I've learned how to date. You know, I've learned the difference between dating and getting into a relationship right away. You know, you meet someone in a week, you're in a relationship. I've learned not to do that. I mean, when I was 17 years old, I was too busy out there, you know, getting my drug. I didn't know how to date. So here I am, 40-something years old, and I'm learning how to date. You know, I got a life again, you know. And it's like now I get to teach my kids. My daughter's 20, my son's 18, and my other one's 16. So I'm teaching them, you know, not only by what I say how to date, but they're watching me how I act, you know, my actions. And, you know, without getting into detail about the relationship thing, I just totally do everything different. I do not do anything how I did before. I do everything different. And I'm much happier for it. And that gives me self-esteem. That gives me self-worth. And over the last 3 years, I had the property and the prestige, everything taken away. And just here recently, I've got this job that was presented in my life that is far beyond my dreams. And it's like my higher power felt that I was ready for these things now. You know, before I wasn't ready for the money. Because when I had all the money, I spent it so quick. You know, it didn't really mean anything. Now everything means... Everything that I get today means something, you know. And I'm going to stick around here. I'm going to keep coming, you know, and get to see familiar faces. And I'm keeping my chair here no matter what. Nobody's going to talk about me and do my inventory in here and push me out the door. They're not going to do that. You know, I've been around for 29 years, and I've seen a lot of people sitting out here like this. In probably a room bigger than this, I can fill up with people that have died that I know from this disease over 29 years. You know what I mean? It's just like, it could be me, you know? It could be me leaving here tonight, and on the way home, you know, I could get hit by a truck. And then tomorrow, you guys, or a couple days, you'll be at my funeral. You know what I mean? I mean, I accept that, you know? Or it could be me going home and finding out one of my children died. And how am I going to react to that? Am I going to go to an old destructive pattern and go use and maybe end my own life? No, I'm not. You know, probably going to call my sponsor and get the we together, and you guys pull me together and pull me through it. You know. So I no longer respond or react the way I used to, and I'm just so grateful for that. And and I really want to thank Chuck for asking me to, you know, come here and share. And and I'm grateful that everybody showed up this morning. I didn't go to bed till 4. I set my alarm for 8, so all I had to do is brush my hair and have a cup of coffee, and I was here, you know. So that was it. Thank you.
Carol. I would like to introduce the second speaker, Rich D. from the Back to Basics group of NA in the Laurel Mountain Highlands area of NA.
Hi, I'm Rich D. I'm an addict. Self-destructive behaviors. The first thing that came to my mind was the things I'd done in my past, you know, and how they changed today. I know I speak from the heart and just tell you where I was, and I'm doing this for myself to let another human being know where I'm at so it heals myself. Because I went through life telling nobody anything in life and being my own little world, and that was the pain I carried around. Growing up, I was a little spoiled brat. I had a good family, and today I can look back and see the mental illness that I had opposed to drugs ever coming into my life, and that was the hardest situation. I had a really great job in my early 20s, and I lost it, and I found myself from a good job to being a male prostitute in Allentown, Pennsylvania, working for my drugs. I look back at it now and I says, how'd it get so bad? And I have no clue, but the drugs took me there. I really struggle today with a lot of issues. I've been to 19 rehabs, 11 halfway houses, and I don't know how to live life. I reached out for help. And by telling another human being that you need help at 40 years old, that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I had this facade. I was John Gotti and a Rockefeller, all made up into one, but I was an insecure little man running around. Life is really difficult for me sometimes. Now that I'm clean, I'm in early recovery. I got 21 months. And drugs ain't in the picture no more, but I can feel myself insecure at times. And they say that's the process of where you have to be at certain times of your life. And I'm super nervous right now. But I hate talking to this. But a friend of mine says one time that guns don't kill people. People kill people. I struggled with so many things going on in my life, and I got numb every day. And now that I don't have the drugs, I can still see that those issues in my life. I can see that I hate public speaking. But self-destructive behaviors, I love chaos, and I have to learn to step back from that right now. And I don't know. They used to call me Captain Chaos in the halfway house. And every day when I get up in the morning, I try to be a better person than I was yesterday. And I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I want to thank everybody for listening. That's all I got. I'm sorry.